Hello and welcome to this Expectations for 2026 discussion, sponsored by PSG Wealth. In today's discussion, we're going to be taking a closer look at what investors should be thinking about as we head into 2026, from market trends and global economic shifts to currency dynamics and opportunities in different asset classes. We explore the factors shaping the investment landscape. This discussion aims to provide perspective on the challenges and considerations investors face in the year ahead. My name is Lua Gabaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. Joining me is Adrian Parsky, is the Chief Investment Officer over at PSG Wealth. Adrian, it's that time of the year again where we, you know, sort of look in the rear view. But, you know, for today's discussion, we're looking firmly, ahead, trying to gaze into the crystal ball, a little bit. What are the key expectations for financial markets in 2026?
I'm Adiwa, and hello to everybody listening in. Yeah, it's been an eventful year thus far, but markets have been kind, even in spite of all the volatility that we've seen. It's been a bit of a roller coaster year, but we're close to the end now. And if we look at the performance numbers, they don't look bad. So I think, you know, we have to wonder what's coming next. And, you know, for us, we see equity markets as remaining quite unpredictable, unfortunately, because, I mean, even though there's quite a lot of talk about US valuations in particular that could drive global equity market returns lower as a risk, and we agree with that view that it is a material risk. But if you actually look at valuations and their ability to predict short-term equity returns, it's very close to zero. So over the short-term, markets don't really care about valuations. They become more structural headwinds over a longer cycle. So we've got to think about the things that can drive returns higher and lower from another perspective, away from fundamentals. And, you know, if we look at 2025 as an example, we knew tariffs came into play, and there was quite a lot in terms of developments on both the fiscal front and the monetary policy front, both domestically and abroad. And those things have played a really big role in where markets have gone this year, and we think some of those will repeat. So, I mean, one of the key ones we think for next year will be the Fed. And what's happening with the leadership at the Fed? We've already seen a lot of pressure being exerted on Jerome Powell and what he's doing, and not really winning the favor of Donald Trump. And it looks like, you know, that term from Jerome Powell will come to an end, and he will be replaced by someone that's probably, you know, open to more sway from the presidency, who's demanding lower interest rates. So as those risks in valuations escalate, we've got a more favorable Fed outlook. And as they say, never fight the Fed. So there's something to keep in mind. And at the same time, I think there's a lot of the support from a fiscal perspective, as well as I've mentioned, even just at the beginning of the year, we saw a complete turnaround in the view out of the U.S. administration. Initially, they said, we've got a primary deficit. We've got current account deficits, all these things that we need to be careful about how we spend money. We saw Elon Musk come in terms of government efficiency and spending and layoffs and all those things. And that quickly turned around to Besson adopting a view of we need to continue spending for growth. So don't worry about government finances. As long as we see commensurate growth into the future, we'll be fine. And that's really where markets are questioning whether we will see commensurate growth into the future. And I think that could be a sensitive point in the coming year, because fiscal spending is continuing, the situation is deteriorating. And in the absence of growth that comes through from that spending, you're essentially just adopting more lazy debt. So those things are important. And given that skepticism around what's happening in the US and the fiscal condition that they have, or where they find themselves, is, I think, a continuation of what we saw around US treasuries versus gold as an investment is likely to continue. We've seen many reserve banks around the globe starting to stockpile gold reserves as opposed to treasuries out of the US. And that's also starting to have an impact on the dollar. And we've seen some some dollar weakness there, and by implication also a stronger rand. And I would think that's the beginning of a cycle that's set to continue, and that's further fueled naturally by investment outside of US borders. We've seen an uptick for demand from US investors in particular to look beyond just the US into international markets, into emerging markets. And in the South African case, we've seen some uptake of our bonds this year, but we still haven't even seen foreign investors enter our markets. And they must be looking at the South African returns, which is then further bolstered by a weaker dollar, and saying these look quite attractive relative to what we've experienced in the US more recently. And maybe there's an opportunity to increase holdings, and that will drive prices higher. So that's our view in a nutshell of some of the key themes that we can expect into the new year.
It is an interesting one, Adrian, and you are highlighting, a number of different aspects, that the investment community has felt in 2025 and some of the things they may, expect in 2026. And you highlighted a number of things that will likely continue. Because obviously when the clock strikes, midnight on the 31st into the 1st of January, it's not like a clean slate per se. So certain things do continue. But, with that said, what are some of the key differences that you think, people may expect to see and feel, in the new year? Yes, some things continue, but are there any key differences that we are expecting, or are we just expecting more of largely the same?
I think it's going to be a question of not so much completely new themes popping up. Naturally, there will be some, but I think the key drivers will be very similar to what we've experienced this year, but probably just more pronounced. So some good examples would be things like Fed cuts. I mean, it's been something that we've been experiencing this year, but given the comments that I've made around new leadership in the Fed, I think we should be expecting a far more assertive stance, dovish stance, in terms of cutting those rates more aggressively, more quickly. So it's a continuation of the theme, but really with a far more assertive implementation line. And largely the same for foreign asset performances as well. We've seen some offshore markets start to lift their heads and do well. And my sense is it's one of those things that tend to happen slowly, 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 and then very quickly. And I think, for both international markets, so developed markets ex-US, as well as the emerging markets, we've seen some life pop up and some of the returns have been good, but I think it's still early days. And I think it's one of those trades that will get more momentum next year.
And with what you're talking about, right, one of the other things that has been discussed through 2025, and it's also been, I guess some of that chatter will continue, is this talk of a potential bubble, particularly in a place like the US. You are talking about, a number of changes that have happened there, particularly around the Fed and some of the market conditions. But this chatter around a potential market bubble has been increasing. How should investors interpret, some of those concerns? Is it, more speculative, or do you see substance in, in some of the concerns that are being raised?
No, I think it's valid concerns. It's one of those things that you can't escape. The facts show us that the valuations are extended, and we see very clear anecdotal evidence of speculation in markets abroad, loose capital conditions. Investors have become very complacent about risks that are around. And these are all signals that you are in a late bull cycle. So it's something that weighs on our thoughts as well. But like I mentioned, you've got to be so careful about anticipating potential recessions or market pullbacks, because I think, I paraphrase from Peter Lynch, who used to say that more money has been lost in people waiting for economic or market pullbacks than what has actually been lost in those market pullbacks. And we know this to be true even today. I mean, there's many people who've been sitting on the sideline now for years, expecting a pullback in markets, and they haven't participated in the upswing. And the other thing to keep in mind is markets recover. So even if you do see that eventual pullback, markets will recover. And I think those are really important elements to take into consideration. It's very easy to identify the issues, but it's very difficult to anticipate how the market will behave over the short term. So I think, again, I think a lot of the news flow will be driven on the back of the Trump administration and what they're doing fiscally and what they're doing with monetary policy. That being said, the markets are exposed given the valuations. And if there is an unpleasant surprise of some sorts that comes out of markets, markets do look vulnerable and a sell-off could be quite aggressive. On the other extreme side is, well, the fiscal and monetary conditions look set to continue to remain supportive. We can still have a decent year out of markets. And the thing that makes it even more complicated is if we see a pullback in US markets, it's not unlikely that we'll see a pullback in domestic markets as well, as markets generally tend to mimic what's happening in the US. But at the same time, our valuation picture looks very different to the US one. I mean, we still have many attractively valued investment opportunities on our local exchange and in our fixed income markets as well. So I think maybe the right approach is to stick to your guns, be a bit more defensive, but be aware of the risks. And, you know, there might be an opportunity ahead as well. So essentially, I mean, what complicates things a bit further in the South African context is that our stocks are cheap, but they can still sell off if there is a sell-off in US markets. So there might be opportunity there. I don't think we should see a sell-off in domestic markets as a sustained risk of permanent loss of capital. It will probably be something that's short-lived and recover because the valuations just support a much higher valuations. Where I think in the US, if things sell off, it's actually just a correction. That means the prices are actually just more accurately reflecting what the fundamentals are on the ground of the US listed entities. So yeah, I think we're in for an interesting year. There is a increased likelihood of a bubble in US markets, but I wouldn't advocate sitting on the sidelines waiting for that to pop. We've seen what happened to investors now in the last few years. The best approach is to just make sure that there's margin of safety on the valuation side of things. Just stay away from speculative things that have narratives, more than things that are supported by, you know, strong evidence of revenue growth, where you have some more security and certainty.
Perhaps just as a quick follow-up, Adrian, with the valuation picture that you are just highlighting, the difference between onshore consideration and, you know, the offshore picture in the US, does this bode well for people that perhaps want to just leave their money, you know, in SA for the long term, maybe not participate in some of the you know, speculation, or does capital perhaps go and seek other geographies outside of the US, outside of South Africa, to actually, you know, go and park their money?
Yeah, I think you know, it's a debate that we have internally as well. I think we find a significant opportunity in South Africa with fewer valuation risks, but at the same time, you know, emerging markets have their own set of risks that they need to contend with, and diversification across emerging markets could be a smart move to get away from some of those country idiosyncratic risks. And there are quite a few opportunities in emerging markets at the moment, but emerging markets aren't the only markets that were sort of overlooked or avoided during the previous 10-year cycle. We see opportunities in Europe and UK and Japan, opportunities all around the world, and even within the US side, although on aggregate valuations seem quite extended, there are still remaining opportunities within US borders. I think it just means that you will have to be a lot more selective and a lot more conscious about what a potential downturn could be doing to your investment and whether that will be short-lived and whether it can make a recovery. So I think in some cases where stocks are very overpriced at the moment, you could see a derating of the stock and the price won't recover very quickly. In other cases, you can see that the valuation is reasonable at the moment, and if there's a sell-off, it will likely sell off as well. But that is actually an opportunity, and we see a quicker recovery for some of those businesses. So, it's good to look at these things from the top down to get a sense of where you will find more opportunities in certain areas than others. But when you look at it from a bottom-up perspective by looking at individual businesses, each region still has significant opportunities that can be used. And yeah, it's you should be careful to like overgeneralize some of these views that we often form in the industry. Otherwise, you will overlook some other opportunities.
Certainly important not to overgeneralize, some of these, some of these points. But apart from the geographical considerations, given the market outlook, what approach or approaches should investors take to navigate, 2026 successfully, do you think?
I think we've been in an environment where valuations haven't really mattered all that much for an extended period of time, which is dangerous. It is something, as with any investment, whether it be on the stock market or a property or a piece of art, you need to be sensitive around the price that you pay, because that will ultimately have a big impact on how successfully you can grow from there. So I think that's really important. Investors need to be mindful of valuation and valuation risk. As I mentioned, bottom-up work is really important. Be selective in your equity allocations. And I think just in general, I think, what we've seen, there's been a sort of a blurring of the lines between investing and speculation or entertainment. I think, we've seen investors move away from the conventional approach of looking at businesses and appreciating what they do and how they make money, and investing alongside other shareholders with the view that this is a sector that can grow, or a good business that will grow with good management, into an area that's far more narrative focused. If you think about the AI theme and the crypto theme and all these things that pop up, and it's really important to, not confuse potential entertainment with true investing. And I think investors need to be reminding themselves of that before the market reminds them.
All right. So that's where we end off today's discussion. It has been great just looking back at 2025, so that it gives us a view of, what to look out for in 2026. Adrian just giving us a sense of some of the key expectations for financial markets, in the year to come, and also highlighting some of the trends that may continue from 2025, but also highlighting some of the key differences that people may experience, in the year to come. We also tackled the issue of a potential bubble, in the US. How should investors interpret some of these concerns? How do some of those concerns bode for local investment in South Africa? Adrian just talking about the difference between the valuation picture in, in those different geographies. But he does warn to say that generalization is probably not the way forward. You sort of have to look at everything, on a case-by-case basis. And then just ending off talking about some of the different approaches that market players can take to navigate 2026 successfully. Once again, highlighting, the place that valuations are likely going to have in people's minds. Talking about the fact that we are at a moment where they haven't seemed to have mattered as much, but we wait to see if any of that perception or sentiment changes in the year to come. So that brings us to the end of this podcast around expectations for 2026, powered by PSG Wealth. I've been your host, Mdio Gavaza, of the Business Day and Financial Mail. Adrian, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks as always, Mandiwa. I appreciate it.
Adrian is the Chief Investment Officer over at PSG Wealth. Now, remember that you can subscribe for free episodes on Spotify, Play.fm, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your podcasts.